Lectionary Lab Live is recorded by Two Bubbas and a Bible live from Gainesville, Florida and Brasstown, North Carolina. Welcome, everybody, to the Lectionary Lab Live. I'm John Fairless. I'm here with my Bubba, Delmer Chilton. Say hey, Bubba.
Hey, Bubba.
Hey, man. Always good to hear you. We're going to talk a little text today. I'm sweating a little bit down here in hot, humid Florida. I don't know how it is up there on the mountain. I hope you're cool. But we are talking text today for the fifth Sunday after Pentecost. Proper 7, and these are the texts for June the 24th, 2018. What you got on your mind today as we get ready to think about preaching?
Well, there's a lot of text. if you go on the Revised Common Lectionary website of Vanderbilt Library, you'll find listed there 8 texts. As I look over those, I was reminded of what it's like when you ask for the dessert cart. Come by. There's a lot to choose from, and you can't have it all.
If the weather wasn't already hot and humid, you work up a sweat just trying to pick between these texts.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so let me see if I can sort some of it out that sort of helps with the decision making.
Yeah.
The semi-continuous, unusually, the reason we have extra text this week is that it gives 2 options from Samuel.
Right.
All built around David and Goliath story. You have the lead up to David and Goliath, and David and Goliath up to the conclusion, the exciting climax when he throws the stone and whacks him between the eyes and he falls. Then you have an or text, a second one that starts after that, in which you have Saul's response and that story I always loved as a kid of David playing the lyre and Saul suddenly getting in a drunken rage or whatever and throwing the spear at him, hoping to pin him to the wall. It's kind of one of those, and he makes him the commander of the armies and everybody loves it. So those are 2 sets. You got David and Goliath story, and then you've got post that David moving into the king's house. All of this is after Samuel has already anointed the new king. So this is, we'll process that a little bit. The second set are Mark and Job with the Psalms that goes with Job. And both of those revolve around the issue of trusting God.
Mm-hmm.
You got, are you asleep? And Job's finally got to the point of saying, why me, Lord?
Yeah.
You know, why'd this happen to me? And the commentary there. And then you've got Corinthians, where Paul continues with that text. And it's basically the line I love in there, do not accept the grace of God in vain.
Yeah.
And how do we do that? So those 3, ultimately you have 3 basic options to choose from. You got chocolate. Those varieties over there, you got ice cream, whatever, you know, you break the desserts down and decide which direction you're going. Then you pick the individual one.
You would want to be mighty careful at trying to serve up that Neapolitan ice cream.
You don't want to just try. Don't be like Deborah's grandmother, who was aptly named Big Mama.
Name for a grandma.
I'll just have a little bit of everything.
It's a great philosophy in life until it catches up with you one day.
You'd be at a table and everybody would order a different dessert and she'd have hers. And before you knew it, here came that long fork of hers and she's taking a taste.
I'm like, can I try a little of yours?
Can I have a little bit of yours? And
yeah.
Who's going to tell Big Mama no? So, Don't be Big Mama about this. Pick one and stick with it.
I hear you. I hear you. Well, let's jump in then. Are we going to start back up at Samuel? You want to jump in the gospel today?
Let's start with Samuel today not overdo it. David and Goliath, on one hand, David and Goliath could be easy. Everybody knows David and Goliath, and those are the ones you have to be careful about because they think they know what it's about. Mm-hmm. So this text starts with a parenthetical set of readings that you can theoretically leave out. And I think I would judge how much of that you'd want to read.
Yep.
I think if I were using this text, I would read the 32 through 49, the assigned part. And what's in 1A, you know, the parenthetical part listed, I would just bring up as you do the preaching to any of it that helps. But, you know, setting the scene for this text, preaching-wise, is pretty simple, you know. What's interesting to me is this is post-Samuel coronation.
Right.
You know, we've already had the story last week where Samuel goes out and he looks at all of these brothers and says, surely this one, God looks on the heart. You know, great story. So, he anoints him king. And this week we find the newly anointed king of the Jews still tending the sheep, still doing what his daddy said.
Yeah.
I think there are preaching possibilities there. The distance between call and actualization. That place we live, the already not yet. I was thinking that David's already been anointed by Samuel as the king of Israel. That's already, but not yet. There's some real possibilities to think about there in how you play that out preaching. The second thing is the attempt to arm David. That always amuses me.
Mm-hmm. Here, put this stuff on, son.
And everybody's done this at Vacation Bible School. Good teachers do this, you know, the assemblies where I remember it, where it's the story of the day. And so I always remember at little Baptist Sunday school in the mountains of North Carolina, and this visiting pastor was helping with Vacation Bible School. I'm not really exactly sure why, but he was not our, I think the next week he was at night, he was doing revival. This was daytime Vacation Bible School. Anyway, he brought this little kid up and asked him if he wanted to be the preacher for the day tonight. And he said, oh yeah, I'd like, you know, he'd known this kid. And so he hands him this Bible. That's twice as big as the kid. And then he starts trying to put his suit on him.
Yeah.
You know, his preacher suit on him. You can imagine the scene. Well, this is kind of how this plays out. We know this. What's interesting here is to play with the symbolism of you can't be somebody else. You got to be you.
You got to be you.
Part of it theologically is David was the new king. I think this story is a lived parable, as it were, the way it's told. That David was not going to be Saul, only better. He was going to be a different king. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's Saul's armor. It's not just anybody's armor. And just think of the richness of that. And you can play with that about not at the past. We're doing a new thing. Mm-hmm. And how often we try to arm ourselves with what was in the past as we move to the future. And sometimes you got to let that go. So I'm really fascinated with that. We have our own gifts. We have our own direction. We have our own call. That's something to play with there.
Well, and that's that particularly follows the trajectory we noted with Samuel. It was time for a change, and this nation is growing and moving forward, one can argue, in their relationship with God. And they wanted to try it their way. And so we've got the growth and change in the nation going on here. And I think that fits really well when you say, okay, well, here was their king. And now we're watching David on the rise, David ascendant. And you're right. It's not going to be Saul's way. The armor doesn't fit. The methods don't fit. There's God doing a new thing.
Yeah, depending on where your church is in its life, denominationally, I know many of us are in that struggle of how do we move into the 21st century, and how often there's this battle between the newness and the traditional. Mm-hmm. and trying to put, and how does that fit? And that's not a, this is not an argument for putting off all, and for Lutherans putting away all vestments and all liturgies and mm-hmm. all that stuff, because tradition is important. But the question is, how do you wear it?
What
part of it's yours, and how do you embrace this? And all traditions have that kind of mm-hmm. kind of thing. So that's another one. And then,
how do we move into the 21st century? You mean other than kicking and screaming, fussing and fighting?
You know, various traditions go in different ways, and I just think in local congregations, I think it's an inevitable story with local congregations, at least most of the time when they're in pastoral transition, which to me seems to be about half the time.
Yeah.
Somebody's coming to an end or somebody's starting, when the battle is, how much of the old do we keep and what do we shed?
Mm-hmm.
And all that. The third thing of theirs are those five smooth stones have always mm-hmm. fascinated.
They only need one.
Eugene Peterson wrote a book on pastoral ministry that he called Five Smooth Stones of Pastoral Ministry. It's a great image. But I do think it has to do with the contrast between the stone, the smooth stones, and the armor, and embracing your gifts, finding out what your gifts are. I mean, David walked out as only a youth.
Yeah.
But he found his gifts and exercised them. So there's lots of things to do with that. The second Samuel text is the post-Goliath story of, you know, David becoming the king. And it's, again, that whole part. He's already been anointed, but the transition takes a while, you know. And how do you move through that? It's kind of interesting about Saul and the desperation of Saul in recognizing that he had been rejected. I mean, the richness there, I think, in that second set is dealing with Saul's kicking and screaming,
mm-hmm.
you know, and throwing the spear as a visual there. And that's a struggle. One of the things that amuses me here is that the psalm that is attached to this, and I know why they did it, but it's still amusing. You've got the story in Samuel 18 of how Saul threw the spear at him and was upset and all of this. And in the very first word of Psalm 113, how very good and pleasant it is when kindreds live together in unity.
It'd be better than throwing spears at each other.
Well, it's actually a commentary on the end when he anointed David the king and everything was going, anointed him the commander and everything was going great for a while. That's the commentary. But I still think it's funny to follow on a story about the two kings fighting. It's kind of like Congress, you know, after they find out we're best friends, but we haven't had that in a while. But anyway,
good.
What do you got?
Good stuff. I'd throw in one other possibility with Samuel, and especially because I've heard several of you that are following the Samuel track this summer, and you're developing some very interesting sermons and series. You know, we got here, as you pointed out, Delmer, a very familiar story to hang this sermon around, and I think this is one of those days when you use that, but. As you also said, be careful because people think they know everything that's in here. What a great opportunity to pick some surprises out and to help them. Again, as people are considering their future, as congregations are considering their future, depending on what track you're taking, there will most likely be giants in our paths for all of us when we're facing our futures. How is God with us? Ultimately, who's fighting our battles? And one thing that came to me is following this idea of call and response, which began with Samuel, and we're following that all the way through. That's one of the ways to tie these texts together. God's call, our response. Interestingly, I see three responses you could go with here. There's a response by the Philistine army, which can also represent what I've seen in many of our churches. Hey, let Goliath do it. And we can always hand it off to, well, you know, they're so-and-so. They're the talented ones. They're the, you know, et cetera, et cetera. How often do you get called on, Delmer, to pray at family gatherings? Okay. let Delmer do it. All right. Let Goliath do it. And there's no risk there. because the rest of the Philistine army just kind of hangs back and, hey, he's going to handle it. We're not going to get nicked in battle today. We're not going to get killed. And we got to be careful of shunting responsibility, I guess. It's easy to do. Then you can go across the valley to the Israeli army, and they're going, well, we're not going to do it. What, you're going to go? No, me? Who? I, what? You know, and they're kind of playing who's on first over there, and nobody goes. Well, I've seen that response in churches too. Nobody goes. Nobody steps up. And nothing changes until, you know, unless something changes, right? And so they, you play around, explore that a little bit. And then, of course, we have the, at this moment, unlikely hero of the story entering this scene, and that's David, who basically goes, well, what's going on here? Well, big giant. God took care of a bear. God took care of a lion. I guess God can take care of a giant. I'll go. Kind of interesting, and as you said, lots to point out there. I like to use little tips and tricks to help people really get a hold of this. Of course, best we can tell by this measure, Goliath's about 9 feet tall, and you don't have to spend much time talking about that. Could that really happen or whatever? What fascinates me is they give the weight of his coat of mail. Yeah. All right, and how many ever shekels and this and the other? Well, a little quick biblical research and finding out how many ounces is a shekel. It's almost half an ounce. The dead gum guy's coat ends up weighing, where did I write it down? 155 pounds. 155 pounds. Put on his coat of mail. And that spearhead.
I've had a chasuble or two that felt that.
Felt like that. That spearhead he wanted to chunk. Just the spearhead itself weighs 19 pounds. Now, I can pick up 19 pounds, but tied on the end of a stick and ask me how far I can throw it, it ain't going real far. Anyhow, sometimes you use things like that to help paint an image of just how right. big this task was. It's not about how good a shot David was with his sling. It's not about how brave he was as a shepherd boy coming out of the field. It's about a willing response to God, and it is God who is still on the battle, on the battlefield. It is God who is the one to be trusted.
Well, there is an interesting take on this by Malcolm Gladwell, who writes about this, about David and Goliath stories. And he starts with this. It's kind of interesting take in which he talked about the possibilities that Goliath appeared formidable and really wasn't.
Yeah.
At that size and the possibilities of he couldn't see very well. And at that size, he's very clumsy and could, if he could, you know, all of these various reasons why actually David had the advantage.
Yeah.
And I would recommend, if you've got the time, you can probably find that part of that book online as another way of looking at that. And homiletically, you might talk about that which we see that frightens us may not be as frightening as we think it is. And we Absolutely. Have been frozen by our fear of what appears.
Ooh, that's
to be,
a good one. Frozen
what
by
appears
fear.
To be immovable. Yeah. So.
Well, we... I think both of us really enjoy talking about these Samuel texts, but yes. we better move on, especially in light of the fact that we've got several other options today. Take us fast forward then. What if you're going to take another one of the tracks with these scriptures today?
Well, the Job and Psalm 107 and Mark 4 track. And all of that, as I said as in the beginning, has to do with your favorite professor at Vanderbilt, or at least the one you quote a lot.
Yeah.
Liston Mills saying, can God be trusted?
Yep.
You have this very short little story in Mark, and Jesus has been teaching and preaching, and the crowds have surrounded him, and they take him in the boat, you know, and we've all known, this is another one of those stories. We got great old stories that we've all heard and all that, and the danger, of course, is our listeners think they know what they mean. So you have to be careful here. But he's asleep at the wheel, you know, right. or at least in the stern. He's there, settles down, takes a nap in the middle of a storm. Great windstorm. The waves beat the boat. It was being swamped. And there he was asleep on the cushion. Mm-hmm. You know, he commandeered the best seat in the house. The place where you steer the boat and laid down and took a nap.
It's the smoothest ride on the boat.
And they didn't wake him up and say, now this is interesting. They jump on him, not with, look, it's a storm, or we, you know, they assume he has, they already have assumed he has the ability to do something. Why else would they say, teacher, do you not care that we are perishing? Mm-hmm. Or at least they wanted him to get emotional about it.
You know? If we're going down, you at least need to be here to tell us how nice we've been and how good it's been. Thank you, boys, for serving with me.
You need to be upset. Or it's kind of like, what is wrong with you? Do you not understand the gravity of the situation?
Yeah.
Something along those lines. So this is, we get to that point. It all makes sense. He's asleep. They're about to die. They're like upset with him for a variety of reasons. Maybe he could do something. He doesn't care. May, you know, whatever. And then, you know, peace, be still. It's almost that kind of unearthly response. Peace, be still, and everything stopped. Mm-hmm. Miracle. Why are you afraid? Have you still no faith? There are a couple ways here. One thing is the issue of don't you care? And I know it's Jesus and not yet the Christ, you know, in their vision, mm-hmm. but they're still thinking he ought to care, and doesn't mm-hmm. God care? That's the key point here. Then you turn over to Job and remember what all Job has been through. You know, that whole deal with, and deal literally with God and the Satan saying, do whatever you want to, he won't lose faith. They're gambling with a human's life. It's almost like the Greek gods playing around with humanity. This is a story, I will have to say. For me, Job is one of those philosophical stories that is in the Bible. There wasn't a real man named Job, I'm sorry. And they're having this thing to try to prove how does God respond to us? So God goes out and let Satan take everything away from him, kill everybody. Everything's gone. And Job's sitting there, and then his friends come and have all these philosophical discussions. And at the end, Job is just talking to God and said, why? What did I ever do to you? And God's response is not exactly, shut up, I'm God and you're not. Mm-hmm. This is the response of trust the one who created all. Play the long game. Trust that I am who that has created you and the world. And even if you cannot see it right now, I will be there at the end. In the end, God. It's like MLK Jr., the arc of the universe is long, but it bends toward justice. Mm. Trusting where God is going with things. That's the question in Job. And that's the question in this Mark text. Yeah. Where are things going?
Yes.
And the writer of Job wanted people to consider in the midst of their situations where they were always saying, oh, things didn't work out for me. God must not love me. He created this situation that's beyond belief to say, the issue is not how life's going for you personally. The issue is trusting God and the overall thrust of where God has taken the kingdom of God. Today's text in this section are all about how do we trust God in the midst of moments when we don't. And I think anybody who's reached, I'm 64, so anybody who's lived this long, you've had those moments. Family members who've died under bad circumstances, illnesses, babies born that died early in my extended family. And you sit and you wonder. And so it's not that sometimes people who are not people of faith look at people of faith and think we're naive and we don't mm-hmm. know how bad the world is. That's not it.
Yeah, that's it.
We know we've been through and we fear. The question is, when the boat is being swamped,
yeah,
how do you find that space? Where do you reach to find that trust
yeah.
that God is still with us? That's what this story is about.
Yeah, I like that. The longer working of God, the arc of history, as you quoted MLK there. It is a much longer term perspective. Another way I thought of to get at this Mark text is how much, and again, this just goes back to, I love the way the Bible is written. I love Mark's style here. What you can learn about Christ and what we learn about ourselves in four questions. All right, so you give people the setup. They're on the way across. You know, Jesus is tired. They're all in the boat. Jesus is asleep. Boom, the storm happens. And then there are four questions, and you've already alluded to a couple of them. Do you not care that we're perishing?
Right.
The disciples asked Jesus. And all the things you just delineated, there's fear or lack of faith or confusion, and we can all pretty well relate. We can relate to all of those in our lives. All right? And then Jesus, why are you afraid? Boy, you talk about a focusing question, and it's an important question for all of us, kind of like when the David and Goliath story. Why are we afraid? Well, this guy looks big. He looks awesome. Any of you ever actually fought him? No.
That's right.
You know, so on and so forth. And we often blow things way up. You know, we make what's in front of us, and we think, here's what's real. Here's what's true. And if you stop and go, well, wait a minute. Maybe that's not what's real and true. Why are you afraid? And then the second focusing question from Jesus, have you still no faith? And wow, talk about a question to turn me inward. Yeah, what about my faith? Where is it? Is it growing? Is it moving backwards? What, you know, it's a question to wrestle with. And then the closing question comes back to the crowd, if you will. Who then is this? Who is this Jesus in our midst? And it's a question of wonderment. It's a deep and searching question. All of those, I think, are excellent places that you could work and use to, you know, pin some thought in terms of this text. And maybe open up a text that is familiar and everybody thinks they thunk all the deep thoughts out of it to show, oh no, we haven't even begun to get to the bottom of this one yet.
Well, I got a couple of things to say before we wind up here, just to back up a little bit, back to Samuel. And I know there are some folks who use screens and visuals. So I got a couple of film clip suggestions, one of which is the notion that maybe we're more afraid of Goliath than Goliath deserved.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Wonderful scene in The Wizard of Oz when they first meet the lion and they're all scared and he's being mean. And then all of a sudden, Dorothy comes up and whaps him in the nose and he turns out to be a quivering. He's, oh, you hit me. I'm just a dandelion, you know. But, you know, he's strutting around and being all, and he turns out not so much. The other one is this notion of a one-to-one battle between the leaders of the armies settling things. Great scene in the movie version, the recent one for the Chronicles of Narnia, the second one, Prince Caspian, where the prince goes, they battle one-on-one, you know. Mm-hmm. With the army standing back. That's kind of a visual of what was going on. It ended differently, but it's a visual of that. And then I was thinking about, as I said what I said about Job, and I stand by it, but what is that thing? The views expressed here are not necessarily shared by the management. That's just Delmer's opinion.
I started to say, oh, you're going to make some friends with that one, Bubba.
Well, you know, it's the way I can understand what God did to Job in that, because it's difficult for me to see that any other way.
Yeah.
And I do think it's like Jonah and a few other things. I don't really, as my daddy said one time out by the barn, he said, them that argue in favor of the fish and them that argue against the fish are missing the point. that if you're going to do, if God wants you to do something, you're going to have to do it. Same thing with Job. I'm not going to argue that point, but it works for me that the person writing this wanted us to experience the depth of degradation that can happen and see what it means for someone to hold on to faith.
Yeah. And one of my church members asked me one time, and this was somebody that I'd developed a pretty good relationship with, and they said, well, Pastor, don't you believe that all these stories in the Bible are literally true? And my answer to them was, doesn't matter.
Yep.
Doesn't matter. The point of the story stands. Whether every fact is literally true, with, you know, all of that, that's not the point. Kind of like your dad said, behind the barn. You're missing the point. If we spend all our time arguing on whether or not this is literally true and whether this, that, or the other, let the story speak, because they do. Well, the lightning hadn't struck us, and somehow we've made it through another show, and we'll be back next week. Bubba, I've enjoyed it. Not much else for us to do today, though, other than to tell everybody bye.
Everybody bye.
Lectionary Lab Live is a Two Bubbas and a Bible production. Our opening theme is Lock and Key by Silent Partner. We go out this session with the theme from Land of the Giants, a great, campy science fiction television series by Irwin Allen. The music is composed by a young John Williams.